this year marks the 60th anniversary of the premiere of one of the greatest shows in television history. Rod Serling's The Twilight Zone debuted in the fall of 1959 on the CBS television network. It aired through 1964, but it never really went away. Always out there in reruns and marathons. There have been two previous reboots of the series, and then a new one that began this week on CBS All Access from Jordan Peele. And with that in mind, we decided to honor the original this week. We'll be talking to a number of different people about The Twilight Zone. We get it underway this afternoon by welcoming in, though, a very special guest, Anne Serling. Her father was Rod Serling, and Anne is the author of the book, As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. It's a big year, the 60th anniversary of The Twilight Zone, the Jordan Peele reboot on CBS All Access, and so much emphasis on your father and his story. But when I went back and revisited your wonderful book, As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling, reminded yet again that the Rod Serling you and your family grew up with was very different than the iconic television image.
Absolutely, and I think that would surprise a lot of people.
And part of that was his, and we saw some of the sense of humor in Twilight Zone, but it was great to read the stories of the voices that he would do, the games he would play with you. The milk game is one of my favorites. Can you share that story?
Yeah, he would try to get my sister and I to drink our milk by telling us, don't drink that, don't drink that. And then he'd whip around, and of course we'd gulp it down, and he'd turn back and say, who drank my milk? And of course, you know, at our age, we just thought that was hilarious.
And he had nicknames for all of you as well. And I think people might find it interesting to note that you spent a lot of time watching The Flintstones, which was a favorite. And was it Huckleberry Hound, where he did the voice of one of the characters?
Yeah, he was really actually quite good at that. You know, he started his career in radio, and he went to Antioch College, and they had a work-study program where he wrote and directed and acted in the scripts that he wrote, and he would do Russian accents and things like that. And growing up, circling back to what you said about the Flintstones, yes, we weren't allowed to actually watch TV during the week. It was my mom's rule, and so my dad and I would sneak, Huckleberry Hound and the Flintstones, and it was great fun, great times.
And he wrote about this a lot in his teleplays and interviews. He spoke about it through the years. His time serving in the Pacific in World War II had a profound impact on him. And then coupled with the loss of his dad while he was serving overseas, that was something that he dealt with in many ways throughout his life, wasn't it?
Absolutely. He was clearly broken in the war, and he wasn't unique to that. I think any vet goes through that. And of course, back then, they didn't really have an awareness of post-traumatic stress disorder. I think it was called shell shock at that point, but there really wasn't any treatment. And in fact, before he went to the war, he was he thought when he went to college he'd major in language and literature. But as he said, the war put an end to that, and he realized that his original plan, he wanted to work with kids because he, in teaching them phys ed because he liked kids. And when he got back, he said that he had to get it off his chest, get it out of his gut, and he changed his major to language and literature.
Yeah, and in many ways, that writing seemed to be therapy for him.
Oh, absolutely, and I think he would say that too. I think a lot of writers feel like that too. You know, it's cathartic, but certainly my dad, because also, as you said, when he was overseas, even though the war was over, he didn't have enough points to come home, and his dad had died, and they wouldn't let him return for the funeral, and that was, you know, needless to say, agonizing for him. His dad was only 52 when he died, so in a sense, you know, that script Walking Distance, which is, I think he would have said, although he switched which were his favorites all the time, but I think, you know, in the end, Rich, he would have said that was the one that was nearest and dearest to his heart, because certainly the dialogue that he put in for the father, you know, it was sort of giving my dad permission to move on, and, you know, things in the future can be as beautiful and lovely as they were in the past, so.
Well, that That's my favorite, too. And for similar reasons, my mom died when I was pretty young. And he talked about that was often his driving urge in a lot of his stories, was that desire to somehow turn back the clock, maybe not to go there forever, but to be able to revisit the past.
Yeah, he told a class that he taught at Ithaca College, he had a propensity to deal with the past, to write about the past.
I watched that, by the way. You sent me a link to some videos of his Ithaca classes, and I watched those today. They were absolutely wonderful.
Aren't they? Aren't they? I love seeing my dad in, you know, sort of that natural format and just hearing him talk. And I've actually heard from students that had my dad as a teacher and, you know, just thought the world of him. So it's been, I just love to hear these personal stories.
We're talking with Ann Serling here on Downtown. You mentioned Antioch, and he went there after serving in the military. And so many wonderful stories about his time there. And the kind of person that we saw through his work certainly emerged. I love the story about him getting angry with anyone who didn't get their hair cut from a Mr. Pemberton. Can you explain the reason why?
Yes, he was the African-American barber, and my dad thought that everybody should go to him and was angry that if they didn't, because he felt, of course, they needed to support him.
That's a wonderful story. His hometown of Binghamton figures prominently, of course, in walking distance, and that's revisited a lot. And there's also a little slice of your life involved in the fact that you gathered as a family. I found this really interesting. You didn't watch a lot of the Twilight Zone episodes as kids, but every Christmas season, you watched the great episode with Art Carney, Night of the Meek.
Right. But my dad had, first he had an office downstairs in the house, and then he had one built in the backyard. And every Christmas, we would watch Night of the Meek lying on the floor in his office. So, yeah, that was one of the first that I was introduced to. The first one I think I ever watched was Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. And I knew my dad was a writer, and a lot of my friends had parents that were writers, but I didn't know exactly what he was writing until I watched that one. And even though Richard Matheson wrote that great episode, it terrified me to have my dad, you know, involved in that and, you know, the monster on the wing and, yeah.
But he was so busy and wrote so many scripts for Twilight Zone and of course, other screenplays through the years as well. But what I find fascinating, your story, is that you had no idea how busy he was because he was always present in your lives. He was there for dinner. He was there to play with you. And, yeah, you didn't go into his office when he was writing. But other than that, he was not an absent father by any stretch.
No, not at all. And to what you said, yeah, he wrote 92 of 156 of the Twilight Zone episodes. So yeah, he was very busy. He'd write, he'd get up very early in the morning, go out in the office and write, and then he'd probably drive over to the studio most days. But yeah, he was always there for dinner, and when I came home from school, we'd play basketball. So I never felt that he wasn't available or wasn't present. Sometimes, you know, Rich, when I looked at him, and I could tell sometimes when he was writing in his head and he seemed a little distant, but yeah, we had, you know, he and I would occasionally take trips together, so those were special as well.
His happiest days were clearly spent at the cottage there in upstate New York. Is that still in the family?
It is still in the family. It was built on my mother's side, so it's probably about 135 years old now. My husband and I were actually married on the cottage porch, but It's also about an hour from Binghamton, which, you know, my dad's hometown. And every summer he would take a pilgrimage and drive back and go by his old house and the carousel and, you know, just revisit these moments of his past.
Would he be surprised 60 years after the debut of Twilight Zone that we're still talking about that show as one of the greats of all time, that there are reboots and that he is revered to this day as one of the most original people in the history of television when he famously said, "My stuff is momentarily adequate"?
He would be staggered, Rich. He would just be staggered that, you know, his legacy has survived all these years. And in fact, there's a program in Binghamton that all the fifth graders study the Twilight Zones. It's called the Fifth Dimension. And I think my dad would have felt this was the greatest honor. These kids watch these, and they're so smart, and they really get it. They learn about, you know, prejudice and mob mentality and scapegoating and irony, and it's just a tremendous program.
Well, I'm a teacher as well, and I have used Twilight Zone episodes and scripts through the years. And when I posted on social media that you were coming on, I had three other friends who were teachers who all made comments about using the Twilight Zone to teach writing, to talk about values, every bit as relevant today as they were 55, 60 years ago.
Yeah, well, you know, he dealt with moral issues and social issues, and my friend Mark Dowitziak, who writes a lot about Twain, and I guess Twain said Twain was a moralist in disguise, and he said the same could be said of your father. You know, but he wrote about the human condition, and time changes, but we don't, whatever that quote is.
But you only had your dad for 20 years in your life. He died so young back in 1975, but in some way, do the reboots, do the Twilight Zone marathons, and the lengthy life of this series keep him even more alive to you?
Absolutely. You know, in writing my memoir, it took me really, I had started another book sometime after he died called In His Absence, and I hadn't worked through my grief at all, and I wasn't ready to finish that book. But writing this book, as I knew him, took about 7-8 years. But it was so cathartic, and, you know, just to work through the grief and have him back like that, so present.
Well, it's a wonderful book, As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. And it's great to learn about Rod Serling, but it's also a wonderful story about family and how even the busiest of people can still be there and be a father and be a huge part of their children's lives. And we're having a wonderful time all this week remembering your dad and the show. And it's been a real treat for us to talk with you this afternoon, Ann.
Oh, thanks so much, Rich. Nice to talk to you as well.
That's Ann Serling here on Downtown. Great conversation. More to come about the Twilight Zone and Rod Serling tomorrow with Paul Gallagher, who's got the Twilight Zone blog and operates the Twitter page as well for the Twilight Zone. And then the gentleman that Ann referenced, Mark Dowitziak, will talk with us on either Friday or Monday about his book, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in the Twilight Zone. So more of it coming up this week.